Hey, everybody. Scott here. Welcome to another episode of the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. We got a good one for you today. Coming off last week with ECW, WWE superstar Al Snow. We just keep this train rolling here in 2018. I think you guys will enjoy today's episode. Let's get to some of the sponsors that make this podcast possible. One of them happens to be Demented Brewing, and they are located in Middlesex, New Jersey. Demented is one of my favorite places to go to just grab a beer and check out the artwork on the wall. They have 16 rotating taps all the time. That's one of my favorite parts about them. They don't have one style that they do. Always something different coming out of Demented. 2018 Barrel Legions are open. You can sign up for both Barrel Legions online or come into the tasting room during regular hours and ask an employee behind the bar so you can sign up and get their barrel release program or their sour releases. You're first to get them. And they're always doing something cool. For example, on Tuesday they do a ton, and they did Gluttony, which is their coffee stout, and they'd set on top of brown sugar, maple syrup, and bacon extract. So that was cast tapped at 5 o'clock. So they always do something new on Sundays. They do the ton on Tuesdays. Just a really cool brewery. Go support them. That is Demented Brewing. Now, luckily, so we love beer so much, we are also sponsored by another brewery called Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, in the old bank building. Just a really roomy spot with, you know, 8 seasonally inspired ales, always changing, good murals on the wall. They have entertainment. It's just a really cool up-and-coming brewery. So go check out Joe in his Manskirt. Now, they got a couple new beers. They got Cougar, which is an old English, an English old ale, clocking in at 9.25 ABV. So that's strong. And then, even stronger, they got Wee Bastard. Not so wee, though. It's a wee heavy that is their strongest beer ever at 10%. So go have a couple beers there. Uber on over there and check out Manskirt Brewing. Now, Susan Robb is a woman. She's actually out of Toronto, Canada. You like how I said that? Susan Robb is a woman. No. Susan Robb's a woman that helps this show out. She's out of Toronto, Canada. She works for the Paul Templer Foundation. Paul Templer is the hippo attack survivor that's been on our show twice that we like to work with. She's gotten us a lot of guests over the year. Her, Kim Ward, and Paul Templer, they're launching the Nepal Outreach Program, and they're really looking for donations. Their goal is to reach $25,000 through individual and corporate sponsorships. They're already over $5,000, and what they're trying to do in Nepal is put 15 kids into school and supply 17 ladies with sewing supplies to start a business where they're selling these quilts. They've sold a couple quilts in already a bunch of different countries, so they're well on their way. Kim Ward, the executive director of the Templar Foundation, a not-for-profit 501c3, their mission is to secure a house for all these women and also get these 17 kids into school. So it's just a very good cause. Kim and Susan are tirelessly trying to get donations from their network. If you're interested in donating, go to their GoFundMe, the Nepal Outreach Program, or donate through Twitter at Kim Marie Ward or at M Susan Robb, R-O-B-B. So the Nepal Outreach Program, a very good cause. And finally, Trivia Revolution is a trivia company based out of New Jersey. We do trivia in beer bars and breweries all throughout the state. You could be in last place and still win prizes. You can win prizes to breweries, prizes to the actual restaurant. I host a Tap Out 15 on Wednesday night, so come on out. Absolutely free to play. So Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, we got a really good one today. Comedian and just an overall good guy. Got to work with him a few times. From That Metal Show and many other things, Mr. Don Jameson joins the podcast. And we just have a great conversation about comedy and all sorts of other things. And then we have a guy by the name of Rich Binning. Now, Rich Binning has a very interesting job. He works for the off-Broadway play that's been going on for years, Puppetry of the Penis. That is correct. I didn't stutter. I didn't make a mistake. So you got to hear all about that. Just another fun week. So guys, enjoy the podcast.
Hello, listening audience. This is comedian Don Jameson, and you are listening right now to Verbal Shenanigans.
Hey, this is Rich Binning from Puppetry of the Penis, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, our shenanigans are cruel and tragic. Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Hey, welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
We are tape in front of no audience at all.
Yes. You know, like, I thought about changing this theme song. So I know I mentioned this before, but every time I hear it, it gets me in the mood to podcast. And plus, I couldn't think of another song that would fit perfectly.
Well, why don't we take that and we put Prince in the background and make everybody happy?
Sure. Speaking of that, I'll get to that in a second. Mm. But welcome back, everybody. We are coming off two very, very good weeks, good listen. So thank you all before we get going for tuning in and listening. And we've seen a lot of likes on Twitter and just some really good numbers over the last 2 weeks. And we're also part of the BS Podcast Network, which is
everybody
seems to be doing us well. So thank you to all the listeners. Just so you know, last two episodes, we had Kenny Anderson 2 weeks ago and John Morris, Olympic curler. Olympics start in 2 days, Berlew. By the time this comes out, they start in one day.
Do you think I still have time to get out there, maybe qualify for an event?
What would you think if you had to try to make the Olympics in what sport? Do you think curling would be the way to start?
I hate to say it, but it's probably like the one you're like, all right. The only other one I could think of is, you know, the speed skating on the really, really short track?
So you're saying that you can...
No.
Have a shot at speed skating.
I don't say I would have a shot. What I'm saying is it's the short track where most winners are from, like, some guy slips and all three of the competitors who really could win get knocked out. So and you just like, kind of walk by and all, yay.
The problem is they'd be, like, 7.5 laps ahead of you. You'd need them to, like, literally...
Yeah, like I need them to really, like, crash and, like, in the stands.
Severely injured. Like...
And
like,
even still, I'd probably be, like, crawling through the ice. I can't really skate, so.
And then last week, for wrestling fans, we had Al Snow on for a long interview. And the great Zap. Well.
Ray Holite.
Yeah, yeah. She was, Al Snow was great. So.
What are you trying to say?
But, yeah. So we're happy with the listens, guys. We're happy with the listenership. And we move on here continue to grow with us as we approach 200 of these episodes. And as our episodes seem to get longer and longer, even though we try to keep them shorter and shorter.
Yeah. I'm guessing we really should figure out what week that 200 goes out so we don't just, like, phone it in that week.
We'll probably phone it in. We'll probably have, like...
We usually do.
Probably have, like, some local comic that nobody knows on as a guest, and it'll be lots of fun.
The Doug Max Hour.
Even though, like, 200 is right around the corner, it's still, like, 14 weeks away, which is, like, 3 months.
Yeah, but the reason I say is I feel if we don't know the exact week it is, we'll have some kind of, like, the weirdest of the weird of the why did you put this on for 200 guests.
That's what people say about our weekly episode, so. But
you have a guy who's a turkey farmer for your 200th episode. It's not even close to Thanksgiving.
You had Goatman back on? We did have a guy back many episodes ago. It's really hard to get more unique than him. He still might be the most unique, other than Lenny Dykstra, but that's a different way.
Yeah.
But he lived his life for like a month or something as a goat. Like he went with goats and ate grass like goats and like had his stomach like. Check to have the acids. Thomas Thwaites, right?
I was trying to look it up. I knew it was Thwaites, Thomas Thwaites. Yeah.
Quite a while ago. I think it was like episode 70 something. But anyway, so that was a weird one. But Berlew, the Eagles won the Super Bowl.
Not
very happy about it.
I kind of come to terms. They were eventually going to get one. Yeah.
A lot of slump busting in the last couple of years in sports. The Cubs, the Eagles, the Cavaliers. Mm-hmm.
Cleveland came close, the Indians.
Going back a little further, the Red Sox. It seems like all the big droughts are over. The new droughts are starting. The Astros won their first. Golden State won their first, you know. A lot of
pretty soon the Browns will win their first game.
Yeah, but I hate the Eagles. I get it. You know, obviously they play in our division.
Yep.
Now, do you have any, like, now you You probably grew up around a lot of Eagle fans, correct? You like a lot of Philly sports, but somehow you avoid
all Philadelphia except for football, which is the Washington Redskins,
which is strange. But
I mean, the quick story is basically I was more into the USFL versus the NFL when I was younger.
Does that mean you're going to be more into the XFL as it comes back?
No, I'll watch it, but I don't say that's my primary source of football. Going back, I was a Philadelphia Stars fan, and the first football game I can remember was Riggins running that 4th-and-1, 44 yards for a touchdown, winning the game against Miami. Kind of fell asleep hearing when the Washington Redskins are now Super Bowl champs. Just stuck with me. I'm like, all right, that's my team.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's no, like people don't have this, like, wonderful organic story of, like, how they became a fan. Sometimes it's just like you're a kid, and you're like, I like that color, and people become – remember when, like – starter jackets were real big. And like they were the big thing. Like I remember, it was almost like turquoise became like a color that people had never seen before because the Sharks, San Jose Sharks, Marlins. The Charlotte Hornets, people were wearing all sorts of Charlotte Hornets gear.
The Marlins.
I don't know if like in that 90s era, like that, there was never any coach that were turquoise before, but it was just like really big. All those teams were like huge. Mm. And that's how a lot of people are like, oh, I like that color. I just stuck with that team, or I like their name. You know,
that's how I picked my driver when I got into NASCAR. Ricky Rubb was in the Tide car.
You picked him by color?
Yeah, he had a bright orange Tide car. I'm like, okay.
I thought you meant his skin hue.
Well, they're all white, so it doesn't really help me in that scenario.
But according to news, Philly is still standing.
Oh. Yep. They tried. They sure tried.
It seems like little bits of information keeps just being leaked more, like as I checked during the day of some things, like, how could we be remiss in not talking about the guy who ate horse poop?
Yeah.
Did you see this video?
I didn't watch the video because that thing kind of stuff would make me just gag. But I saw the pictures of it. It's like,
It's horrendous. It's just this drunk guy. Everyone's around him chanting. He like gets up, brushes like his scarf off, and like just puts a piece of crap in his mouth, and everybody's like, yeah, Super Bowl. Yeah, how did that equate? Like, we won, so let's put crap in our mouth.
Bite this.
I don't know.
Tastes like Romo.
Listen, I get that maybe like Philly's a little bit more under the microscope because they're known for being insane. Like, everyone's expecting Philly to be basically a pile of ash by the end of the parade on Thursday or whatever it is. But
4 million people, they estimate. It would be the biggest parade, I think, about any kind.
Yeah. And then I saw the people on top of the that awning, Ritz-Carlton or something like that. That came down. Like, were they not thinking, like you know, there's 25, 30 people on it, like that's going to hold it. Then I saw a couple cars get taken down.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a Wawa or something get raided.
Yeah, I saw that.
They just came in and started throwing food and took everything and left.
So I haven't told my favorite one yet so far.
Which is what?
Well, you know how the week before the story was the guy who punched the horse.
Oh, yes.
Well, this time they decided, no, let's take care of the horse. So they stole a cop's horse.
Yeah, two, apparently. First off, where were the cops? Like, we're not fighting that guy.
How'd they get up that pole with all that hydraulic fluid? Hey, where's the...
I just hope someone has on a video, like, a guy riding triumphantly at, like, a 3.0 blood alcohol content, like, yeah! Like, giddy upping down the street.
There's a Instagram photo of him with a horse in his apartment and all.
I mean,
haven't found a space for him yet.
That's almost up there with that video. Remember we played a long time ago where that guy jumped on the back of a moose? Rode the moose in the water.
I was trying so hard to find his contact info to get him on the show.
Now we got
to
get the guy that stole the police horse.
That's number 200. Those two guys.
But, you know, it's the Eagles won. I'm not very happy about it. Not that I love the Patriots, but I just have a hard time rooting for anything Philadelphia because they're biggest rivals in most sports at this point for the teams I like.
And the thing I can't say now, you listen to ESPN and Fox Sports, like the Undisputed, and the first take is like, is Brady's legacy tarnished by this one loss. Yeah, he's gone to like nine Super Bowls. Yep.
Is it over? I'm like, did you see the stats he put up last night?
He put up 505 yards with his two best wide receivers out.
Yeah, 500 yards. He was not the problem. It was the defense that couldn't stop a single play.
Oh, he could have caught that catch.
Yeah, I know. I was like, oh, that was a weird Super Bowl. We have two quarterbacks going out for catches. And I give the Eagles credit, though. They played with balls, man. They just went for it on fourth down. They ran trick plays. Just very confident in their offense.
Yeah,
and Foles, you got to tip your hat to him.
And kind of add to it, everything that could have went the other way did go their way. Those two touchdown passes where we're all like, I know it's a catch, but is it an NFL catch?
Yeah.
And we were debating on that, and they got both of them. And going for it on fourth down both times, I mean, it was both gutsy, and they got it done. And now everybody's saying trade Wentz and keep Nick Foles.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I think you pull the, you know, Winston's not even necessarily coming back right away.
Yeah, you know? He'll probably be back. I mean, legally, he'll be back in September, but if you're smart, maybe October. They say it takes a year or so.
There's like two ways they can look at it. They can trade Foles, but he's got the highest possible value right now, and get probably something solid for him. Or they could hold him till the trade deadline, let him start the season, let Wentz come back, and then trade him at, you know, halfway through the season to somebody. I don't know. I'm always of the thought, like, if Wentz is your guy, trade Foles. You're never going to have a higher market value now.
You're never going to have another opportunity where the backup is going to do that. So the only thing I could say is if he's on their roster opening day, you got to let him take at least the first snap of the first game so he can relish it.
Yep. Yeah, I have. I remember saying a couple weeks ago, like, I'd take Foles as a backup any day. The guy had some good years, man. He just kind of, you know, like, got shifted out, and, you know, he had a couple good seasons there, and he's still young. So.
Yeah, he went to the swamp that's known as Jeff Fisher teams.
Yeah. But you figure there's still a bunch of teams that need a quarterback, or a bunch of teams that are going to draft a young quarterback that could use a Foles for a year or two. And it's always funny when those backups, like, they're like, oh, yep, just made my contract. Yeah. Like Flynn. Yeah. Matt Castle. Castle has to be the champ of contracts.
I would say Flynn. Like, Flynn got a huge-ass contract, and went after he got traded, they're like, yeah, you're backing up Russell Wilson. Then he was bouncing around for years and all. He was like a backup in Buffalo.
Castle got a lot of teams, too, to play on.
Minnesota, Kansas City.
Patriots, he was there for a while. Well, just for playing.
Well, that's where he got it, yeah.
But did you like the halftime show?
I didn't mind it. I thought it was good.
I think what they're doing now with all these artists is just they're having them do too many songs. Mm. Where like you're playing, you know, you're doing bits and pieces of like he did like 12 songs last night probably. So there's no like it feels like the flow doesn't get going, and it's also it's such a show now. It's not like a band playing three songs and like getting out of there, but. I wanted to bring this up because obviously you had the Prince thing happen and pop off the hologram, which I thought was cool, you know, and it's fine, you know.
Why not? Minnesota loves him. Why not?
Well, this is the point. So I see this post today on Facebook. It was a tweet from somebody, and I just had to, like, it made me want to puke. Like, it just this is the society we live in now, and it was. Posted by one of our friends, but we'll get to that in a minute. But it said, reanimating a dead black musician as a hologram against his wishes in order to make him perform for millions of white people is almost too obvious a metaphor for how this country consumes black art.
I have so many
problems with this.
Well, let's start with the opening. Obviously, somebody approved it from his family because they had the rights to his music, so... It's not like they just go, hey, I got this Prince cassette. Let's put it up there.
There's so much wrong. Okay, let's start at the beginning here, okay? So because somehow you're going to make this a racial thing, but this person is the one who brought up race, okay? Mm-hmm. So no, I haven't heard one person bring up how does this relate to race? So what black musicians, there's... infinite number of great black musicians. Okay, yeah. If they were honoring Sinatra and he came out, would this person have anything to say? No, Okay, this is really like picking at straws to somehow turn this racial.
Wasn't there a Tupac hologram at like one of the awards? I forget.
Yeah,
I
forget. It got shot by the Biggie hologram. Yeah. It was tragic.
Damn Matrix.
So why make this racial? Okay, so a dead black musician against his wishes. Okay, in order to perform for millions of white people. So there's part two. Okay. Last I checked, millions of white people, yeah, watch it, but millions of black people watch the Super Bowl. Millions of Chinese people and Asian people and Spanish people watch the Super Bowl. Last I checked, the NFL was very far from all white.
We're the majority. We can't deny that. But at the same time, it's not solely to make white people happy what they did right there.
I mean, just look at the makeup of the teams. It's not all white. I hate to tell people that. But yeah.
Don't look in the owner's boxes. Yeah, yeah. Then you might have a point.
The wide receivers, that look at them. But no. No, but listen, like, why pull so hard to make this a racial thing? And then the last part of that, almost too obvious a metaphor to how this country consumes black art. Now, here's Prince, who just died, being honored in a, you know, they're trying to obviously honor it in his hometown, in Minnesota. That was the whole point, okay? So you're going to claim that people are just trying to freely take black art? That was the goal of that?
No, I'll put it this way. The Super Bowl was in, like, Giant Stadium, and Springsteen just died. You goddamn guarantee there would have been a Springsteen hologram and somebody performing with him. That's an absolute guarantee on that. I just don't get the... It's what I call just stretching for some kind of fact. It's like you can't... It's not something you would naturally think of, but you had to, like, literally lay out every single aspect of it and just say that's why they're doing it, and it's just silly.
And these are the kind of people that will be like social justice warriors online, like race this, that, race that. You just made it about race. Mike, for 1 second, did you think about race when you saw Prince pop up?
Well, I gotta put it this way. When you think of black people, the first one that pops up is not necessarily Prince. I gotta be honest. I mean... No offense, I mean, great culture and everything, but it's like, Mike, pick a black person. It's not Prince.
So every show when they honor Michael Jackson, is that stealing black art? Mm-hmm. When we honor basically the origins of rock and roll are all from black musicians, jazz musicians. Like, are we stealing black art? Like, is that? It just rubs me the wrong way so bad. This is just a person looking for controversy and likes and, you know. Just wanting to stir the pot.
Yeah, it's one of snooty people that, I don't watch football, but when I do, it upsets me in such a way.
Exactly. I want to like get like 10 black guys on right now and be like, did you think about, when you saw Prince pop up, were you like, man, these white people stealing black art? I like how I did that very stereotypical black voice, too.
During Black History Month, good job, Scott.
Yeah. Like, were you guys like, man, they're stealing our art right now? Or were you like, wow, that's pretty cool, Prince got honored? Yeah. Like, everyone is just so overly sensitive. It's not even, I don't even call it overly sensitive, because it's an act. It's an act. Yeah. You're not that offended by everything. And if you are, you're just acting, okay? You're acting, okay? Or there's something wrong with you where you just want to be the center of attention. Okay. Yeah. Nothing offensive was done last night at this. First off, do you know how much they focus on not being offensive at the Super Bowl? Like, it's probably their main focus. Like, we can't offend anybody. Yeah, you know,
ever since Janet Jackson.
Remember, everyone was afraid of like Lady Gaga making a Trump
poor
statement
Justin
or something.
Timberlake, he's like, how can I do a Super Bowl show without you people complaining about me in some way?
There's a guy that we were talking yesterday. There's a guy like. That maximized his talent. Like, you know, he's not like, I wouldn't consider him like the greatest singer ever or like, but that guy has stayed relevant now for like 20 years and just keeps getting, you know, he's just an entertainer.
I mean, put it this way, you look at boy bands, who would you say from the boy band genre would be the second highest, most popular, still relevant person? I can't really even think of Nick Lachey.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm being, it's a joke, but I'm serious. I can't think of another one. I mean,
Yeah, he transcended.
Was Ricky Martin in Menudo, or who was in Menudo?
Ricky Martin.
Yeah, even then, it's like, oh.
And he's not relevant now, you know? Like, Justin Timberlake's very relevant. He just put out a new album, you know? So, I don't know. These people, I find it hard when I see, like, men posting, like, oh, no men are watching this halftime show. Nobody's enjoying this. We're men.
Like, I want stripper poles out there.
Like, all right. You know, when, are you really even watching the halftime show? Or are you, like, talking to your friends, like, you're having a snack during the halftime? Like,
that's your bathroom break. Go to it.
And, you know, give the girls something. Mm. You know, let the girls, like, enjoy watching it or listen to a musician. Like, guys are so... And then I've seen people post, like, oh, I didn't like the commercials this year. I'm like, dude, how old are you? Like, oh, the commercials and the halftime show. Like... It's a football game.
Yeah. I can't even rank them just because I don't remember any of them.
And it's like, the Giants one was fantastic. Yeah. The Odell Beckham Dirty Dancing one, that was ridiculous.
Eli, this is how I get in the Hall of Fame right here.
Say what you want about Eli. That guy, the Mannings have a sense of humor, man.
They do, and it
works perfectly because they're so Manning-ish. Like, you know, but underneath that all, they definitely are goofballs.
They play it. Yep. They know their characters and they play it. Even the one that didn't go to football, Cooper, he does his stuff.
That's who we got to get on the podcast, Cooper Manning.
I think he was a part of our list a while ago.
Listen, we don't go A, we go B, C.
Yeah.
Okay. We strive for the.
Yeah. Once in a while, we'll get to the A minus. It's like, ooh.
Right. Every once in a while, your kid brings home an A on a test, and you're like, wow, who'd you cheat off of? But we're like, we're getting B's and C's.
Yeah.
But,
speaking of B's and C's, our first guest.
Yeah. But, yeah, let's get to our guest here. All right. So I had the pleasure of having him at Tap House 15 recently. The man has been around the comedy business for a very long time. He's been on That Metal Show. He writes for Roast. He's been in the comedy game for a long time. And one of the just nicest dudes I've met in this business. I'm very happy to bring onto the show Mr. Don Jameson. So we're going to give Don a call. Don is a very funny comic, but he's just like a really nice dude. And you may recognize him, like I said, from That Metal Show and a bunch of other things. So let's give Don Jameson a call.
Let's do it.
Hello.
All right, let's do it.
Don, what's up, man?
Everything.
Where are you right now? Are you in Jersey or are you,
yeah,
you on the road
Jersey,
somewhere?
Yeah, man. Now I'm about to go back out for about 10 days and do a bunch of stuff, but yeah, I'm home now. So
are you originally from Woodbridge, or is that where you lived for a while? Or
no, why is that on my Wikipedia page?
I don't know. I didn't even look at your Wikipedia page.
I'm trying to figure out who he is. So I don't need you.
Well, I mean, I guess I didn't really mean Woodbridge. I just saw that, you know, the old 732 area code and whatnot, but.
Nothing on Wikipedia about where he's from.
I made that up. I just made up a Don Jameson factoid.
But if you want to say I'm from Woodbridge, that's fine. I mean, I got nothing against Woodbridge.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really need to be from Woodbridge. Yeah. Where did you grow up, anyway?
I grew up in Jersey. I grew up down closer to the Jersey Shore. You know, I worked at Seaside Heights when I was a teenager.
Yeah,
I'm a Jersey guy, man.
Were you guy pimping people to play the games, you know, for give up 50 bucks to get a little gorilla or something?
Well, the thing is, I worked on the boardwalk, but I didn't work at any of the cool stands where there was big fuzzy animals like that chicks would try to win.
Listen, I've been down the seaside. There's a lot of fuzzy animals, but
yeah, right. But and they used to drive IROCs and and later became famous as the Jersey Shore. I understand, but I was the loser that worked at I worked with a Vietnam vet at one of those the machine gun game where you try to like shoot the
star
like the star out of the target.
Oh.
No chick played that game the entire summer.
I can't imagine that's a great safe thing to do with a Vietnam vet too.
And that's all who played the game is guys who come in and if you left the slightest little bit of red, you wouldn't give them a prize. And I'd have these 45-year-old guys screaming in my face. Here I am, 18, trying to get laid on the boardwalk, and they're going, "I had 45 confirmed kills. You know who I am?" And I'm like,
"No, but I'm calling the authorities about you."
What was the prize for filling in the star? Like, what did they get?
I don't think anybody won the whole summer. I have no idea. It was impossible. Like the guy that killed Bin Laden couldn't have won it.
That's great. You should tell that on stage. But that's a funny story. So when you were growing up, were you like I know a lot of people know you from, you know, a persona of like a very big music guy, obviously from that metal show, and just even your act, you know, just listening, you have a lot of stories about music. Were you like a music kid? Were you a musician, or was this something you found later in life?
Yeah, it was always music and comedy. You know, my first records were Kiss Destroyer and George Carlin Occupation Fool.
All right.
They both affected me really heavily. And you know, especially with Carlin, it was like I really didn't understand a lot of it because it was 11, you know, but I knew it was subversive, you know, and it was the same thing with Kiss. It was like, oh, my parents hate me listening to this, then that's a good thing, so let's keep listening.
Right.
And that was the appeal of both of them to me. Like, they were both subversive. There was both, you know, danger in it, and I was attracted to that, man. And so, you know, those two worlds are always part of me. And, yeah, I did play guitar when I was a teenager. I was in bands and stuff. And
Give us a good band name you were in. I'll give you one of mine.
I was in a band called Beautiful Dreamer.
That's not that bad. Mm. It's a little cheesy, but it's not that. I was in a band called Not Quite Banana.
Hmm.
That's bad.
Yeah, yeah.
I never been in a band, but I always said my band name would be Lethal Barbecue. Something about that.
You'd be big in the South for sure.
Yeah, yeah, well, that's what he goes for. But
that's our audience.
Yeah, so were you like a punk rock kid, or were you trying to play metal back then? Or
yeah, it was always metal. You know, yeah. After Kiss, it's, you know, the floodgates sort of opened. I got into Aerosmith, and then I picked up the first Iron Maiden album, and then everything went. Well, yeah, well, everything went crazy after that. And every week I'd go to the Ocean County Mall and find the guy with the long hair at the record store and say, all right, I just got Iron Maiden Killers. What's the next thing I get? Oh, get Motorhead Bomber. And then the weekend after I went, you know, and, you know, then like you see, like, you know, Metal Health by Quiet Riot. And there's a song, Come On, Feel the Noise, and spelled C-U-M. So, you know, say goodbye to your lawnmower money for that week, you know. And I just went from there, and I just started loving all these bands. But at the same time, I also loved comics. You know, I was listening to George Carlin. I was listening to Cheech and Chong. And then as I got, you know, into college, I started listening to Dice. And so these worlds were always a part of me. But I think the change for me in terms of, you know, deciding, you know, maybe comedy was a better route for me is because it was just sort of like, you know, there's a lot of drama in bands. I mean, Housewives stuff.
I was just going to ask you, like, I was a musician for a long time, bass player, and played in 3-4 different bands. Loved it, obviously. Like, it's still to this day, if I could pick, like, to have a band again, I would probably pick that. But it's just so hard as people start having lives and schedules and you got to get together every week and you rely on other people. I feel like that's why I started doing comedy. Obviously, I'm not very long into comedy, you know, like 4 years, 5 years, but it's all on me. You know what I mean? Like, everything is on me. There's no one to hide behind. There's no schedule to hide behind. It's what I want to make it. I wonder if you find the same thing.
You know, it's just right. You don't have to split the money five ways. You don't have to deal with everybody. You know, this guy's wife doesn't want him in the band. This guy's girlfriend doesn't want him in the band. This guy's herpes flared up, so he can't make the gig. I mean, it's a problem. You know, with comics, it's just you put your dick jokes in your pocket and you go. That's it. Yeah.
You don't have to wait for the other band members to come up and say, can you jive to this dick joke?
Right, yeah, you don't have to lug any equipment. It's like, if there's a microphone there, great, then you're all set to go. So, and I got into comedy later in my life, you know, because I just you know, I wasn't sure. I was like, God, you know, I really wanted to do something with music, but, you know, it just didn't pan out, and I didn't have the passion level to go to the, you know, to kind of take it to the next place where you need to go when you're in anything creative. Obviously, you know, if you're a comic, you have to have the passion to really, you know, bust your hump and make it in this business, because it can be brutal. But you know, I definitely found more of a passion in comedy. So but I always wanted those worlds to collide, and they have, like, in the last 10 years for me, which is, you know, just I couldn't imagine this, you know, when I started out 20 years ago.
And when you were growing up and you had this passion, did you have, like, a literal plan to get into stuff, or was it just, oh, I'll always love this, and I'm going to be an accountant while I'm loving my music and comedy?
I still have no plan. So, you know, you got to, it's a journey, man. You know, Scott, how long are you doing it now?
I did a little bit in college, but I don't really count that, but I've probably been back at it like 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, you got to enjoy the journey, man. I mean, those especially the first 4 or 5 years, man. Those are some of the best years because, like, you have no restrictions. You have no pressure to try to get paid. Right? All you're trying to do is just get up on stage and try to get your legs under you and develop an act. And there's, you know, you could write about it. You know, you could write about a horse, a chair, a girl, whatever.
You've seen my act.
No. I keep telling you that horse joke's not an opener.
That horse chair closer you do is not working.
Yeah, you might have to tweak that a little bit. Yeah, you might have to throw a girl into that. Yeah. But it's great until you find your voice, and then you start writing stuff, and you go, that doesn't really fit what I do. But you know, and then your world kind of narrows down. But that's a great thing because it's sort of like, okay, I kind of know my character on stage, which is really just you. But
it's funny. I was having a conversation with a comic the other day. You know, he's been, you know, headlining for a while now, but in it 15 years, and we always go out, we take our dogs for a walk, we're just sitting there talking, and he's been in, you know, for a while, he's had, you know, he headlines here and there, and he's got a day job, we're just talking. To me, like, what I'm finding suddenly is that I'm kind of enjoying the ride, like you're saying, but I almost look at, like, doing this is, it's almost like, you know how these video games, you like have a character and they acquire like a new skill or a new like all of a sudden, like, you know, I'll have a week or two lull where I'm like, all right, these are okay, and then it's like, something clicks, like, and I earn, you earn this many experience points, like,
you
all
got
of
this
sudden,
potion, you have this great joke about a horse chair,
and that's what I and I see guys who've been in it so long, they have like this endless bag of tricks and these endless skills and things. So it, to me, I just thought it was like a good analogy because, like, you have a bad show, a bad person, or a killer show. You learn this one thing, and you're like, wow, okay, now I know how to, the energy I want in this bit, or the energy, or how to deal with a weirdo in the crowd. You just kind of keep earning these, what I call, like, experience points. I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, 100%, and when you're talking about this with somebody else 10 years from now, you're going to say the same thing because it's always practice. You know, every time we get on stage, we're practicing. You know, bands can practice in a basement, in a rehearsal space, a garage. We practice in front of the crowd, so we have to learn something every time. And if we don't, then, you know, then you probably don't really, you know, probably don't give a crap, honestly, because why else go up there? You know, if you're not going to go up there and give 100% and try to take something out of it, even if it's a crappy show. Let me put it this way. No comic ever killed and raced back to their hotel room and rewrote their whole act.
Yeah.
But if you bomb, you are back in your hotel. There's 5 girls waiting for you after the show. Your friends want to go out drinking. I'm going to the hotel. I'm writing 5 new taglines for every joke. That's never happening again. That's how you learn.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when you got into the comedy scene, like when you first started, were you like, was it in that comedy boom, or was it like in a era where there wasn't a lot of comedy?
Total post boom, you know. So I had to do it for the love, you know what I mean? It's like when hockey players 20 years ago, they were doing it for the love. They weren't getting paid anything. They had to say, look, I don't care about my teeth. I want to play hockey. I'm not going to get paid much, but it's going to be cool. And that was the same with comedy. It's like when I got in, it was like I remember these headliners telling me, like, local dudes with no name and, like, basically no credits would be making, you know, $1,500 a weekend.
No. I hear these stories from, like, you know, all these different podcasts I listen to, and they're like, the boom was insane. Like, you know, like, no, endless, every establishment had some kind of show, you know? Like,
It's like
that was that was the only thing that was left over, was there were a lot of open mics and places to work out. So that was the good thing. Like, even like Rascals Comedy Club, man, if you didn't play the big room, you could do the open mic in the bar after the big show. Or, you know, there was a place in Red Bank called The Laughing Bean, which was a coffee shop, and they had an open mic, and they eventually actually became a real comedy club on the weekends. And so you could actually kick around Jersey pretty much any night of the week and get at least get up, you know, before, you know, and obviously this is all predating, you know, obviously work, you know, me working and actually getting paid to do it. So I found a lot of places to be able to get up and do it. So that was good. But yeah, even when I started getting paid, you know, you would drive to from Jersey to friggin' Altoona, Pennsylvania for $75, you know, and but that's what you did, man. Yep. You know, I wasn't doing it for that. I was doing it because I was like, hey, I want to try this. I want to see if I'm into it. And I got to do it. I can't take a shortcut, man. I got to do it the way every guy has done it. Seinfeld drove to Altoona for $75, you know, so you got it. It has to be done that way. You can't just skip to the head of the class. It's impossible.
Now, what was your original act? Was it a lot like what today, where you bring up like your different loves of metal, or was it like totally different observational comedy or something like that?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. Until I started doing that metal show, I really didn't talk about music that much in my act. Mm-hmm. And I was talking when Brian Posehn, who's, you know, kind of a heavy metal comic as well, and just a great comic anyway, but he and I were talking when he actually came and did that metal show, and we were talking backstage, and he's like, he goes, yeah, man, he goes, I really just a few years ago started writing more about, you know, hard rock and metal in my act, and it started feeling weird that something that was such a big part of his life was missing from his act, because that's what we write about, our life. So how am I not? And I go, wow, I never really thought of it that way. You know, I guess I didn't give the crowd enough credit to like be able to get a lot of the jokes and you know, even stuff that might, you know, I do a joke about guar in my act, which maybe 1% of the population on Earth really knows who guar is in a major way. But I set it up, you know, I say they're dressed in monster costumes and stuff. So, you know, the easy ones like Twisted Sister and Motley Crue and Kiss, the ones everybody knows, those, that's a no-brainer. But some of them, you know, like I've had some fun experiences with bands that are maybe a little deeper, but I, you know, I explain it to the audience and I set it up so they could still enjoy it. But it's so nice being able to talk about that in my act because, yeah, dude, it's a huge part of my life.
Now, obviously you're still working all the time and, you know, I'm able to work with you and whatnot. Do you like working with like young comics, new comics? Like, do you enjoy that, or do you find it like, oh God, like you know nothing, kid? Like, do you enjoy the well, experience of some new comics?
Well, not like in a Kevin Spacey way. I don't know what you're trying to get out there, but
that's what I'm getting at.
You're in. Don't worry, Scott.
Yeah, I was just gonna say you didn't even wink at me when we worked together.
I tried.
You didn't show it off, Scott. I saw that.
You looked away from me. You looked away from me. I tried. yeah, of course. No, I mean, you know, I've never been like one to like mentor people, you know, but you know, there's a comic you guys might know, Chris Johnston, who, yep, you know, that I'm proud to say, and he's proud to say that like I kind of mentored him over the years, and he's become a really, really great comic on his own.
Yeah, he's actually doing Tap House in 2 months.
Good, yeah, and yep, he opens for the Impractical Jokers, yep, and he headlines his own show. I tell him now, I go, I don't want you opening for me anymore. You're too hard to follow. I can't have you, you know. But no, he still does, and we have such a fun time. But yeah, of course, man. I love the new energy, and I just like, you know, when I go do a show, man, I want the comics, just I want it to be a nice variation of comics, man. It makes it more interesting for the, yep, audience. You know, while I'm not a young comic, you know, I try to obviously, you know, make my act as current as possible, but it's fun to watch young comics and they're referencing, you know, they're referencing Netflix and they're referencing all the new stuff.
Not
that,
a lot of guar,
you know,
jokes
really
out
talk
there.
About. Yeah. Not a lot of 25 year olds doing guar jokes. No.
Now tell us about the, that metal show. How did, I mean, obviously we know you're good friends with Florentino, and how did that actually present itself to you guys? Did you guys pitch it or did someone come to you for it?
Yeah, the three of us, you know, we're hanging out, and Jim and I were guesting on Eddie's radio show, and we were just like, he's like, look, I host over at this VH1 Classic, and they play metal videos, and, you know, we started to develop a little chemistry together on the radio, so we're just like, hey, let's try to put this, like, down on paper, some of the stuff we were doing, in Eddie's studio, like, let's see if we can translate that to a like TV format. And so that's what we did, man. We stapled three sheets of paper together with the ideas. We brought it in. We pitched it, you know, left thinking, and the whole meeting, Jim and I just busted Eddie's balls the whole time. That was the whole meeting. There was literally no mature conversation whatsoever. But they liked that. That's what they liked. They liked the chemistry between the three of us. And so they took the three pieces of paper, put it on their letterhead, and then gave it back to us 2 weeks later and said, here's our idea for the show. So they basically took our idea and put it on their letterhead. So it became their show. And we did it for 14 seasons.
Yeah.
It's really amazing, man. I got to interview every one of my idols from my childhood. And it's fantastic, man. I'm working with my two best friends. I mean, can't get better than that.
When you're dealing with all these big names and people you looked up to, number one, is it nerve-wracking, or is it like relaxing to kind of say, oh, I know so much about you? And was there ever one that came off as like a total diva that you were shocked by?
I've never been like a starstruck guy. It's weird. I just, even as a kid, it just never entered into my mind. But I also grew up in a small town in Jersey, so I probably just didn't even strike me probably that I'd ever meet anybody famous or become a D minus level of fame myself. So
D plus, I guess D plus. Mm.
I guess it never occurred to me to like be nervous. And yeah. And Scott, you hit it on the head. It's like I know so much about all these artists already. You know, I've been training for the job since I'm 11 years old and I got Kiss Destroyer. So, no, you know what? 99.9% of people, way cool. You know, I mean, every once in a while you might catch somebody on a bad day, but I mean, all the people in the metal scene, man, they're all so cool, man. They're all so down to earth. A lot of them been through the mill, man. They've been at the highest heights. They've been at the lows. And, you know, the ones that, you know, have kind of stuck with it and kept fighting, still around today, still making great music. So,
yeah.
You know, sometimes it's the younger guys who have a little more attitude, man, because they haven't reached that peak yet.
They haven't been hit with the life stick.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's like guys like Alice Cooper, you know, or, you know, Rob Halford from Judas Priest, any of the guys from Black Sabbath, like, you know, those are guys who deserve that, who could have an attitude, who have zero attitude, who just couldn't be nicer people.
And it's funny because, like, nowadays there's, like, it's really awesome because we see, you know, this resurgence of vinyl, resurgence of touring. You know, my brother works for a record industry for a metal label, and it's just, you know, these bands, they don't really go away. They might go away for even 10 years, 12 years, but if they made good music and they may put on good live shows, they find a way to come back. And, like, I think people, you know, we saw the digital market of music. We're like, oh, crap, music's dead. You know, no more albums. It's funny. All of a sudden, there's a gigantic resurgence in vinyl and albums again and touring again. So it seems to peak its head up no matter what.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like I was saying, even with comedy, enjoy the journey, because you're going to have huge ups and then you're going to have huge downs. But that, you know, but as far as your temperament in the business, you got to keep an even keel. Otherwise, you can't take that emotional roller coaster. It's too, if you take every high as you can, and you take every low as you can, you can't sustain that. You'll go mental. So, you know, a lot of these bands have gone, you know, especially during the 90s, man, a lot of hard rock and metal disappeared, man. It was lean times for a lot of bands. And yeah, you're right, man. There's, you know, between, you know, vinyl and of course like SiriusXM satellite radio, yep, and Spotify, you know, people are being reintroduced to a lot of these bands. I'm about to, you know, take off this weekend and I'm one of the hosts of the Monsters of Rock cruise every year.
Yes.
Which is 50 of your favorite bands from the 80s. Kix, awesome. Queensryche and Lita, wow, Ford, and you know, you know, any band you can imagine from the 80s is on this cruise, man. And it's packed, it's sold out.
Well, I was just
going
to say, they wouldn't
people
do it. They wouldn't do it if people weren't going to come, and you know, there is an audience there.
Yeah, they're still there, and then I get off the cruise, and I'm going to host this festival called 80s in the Park. So same thing, man. It's all these great bands from the 80s, LA Guns and Lynch Mob and Enough's Enough, and you know they're having a 3-day festival, and I'm going to host that, which is so cool. So yeah, it's you know, although we're not doing that metal show anymore, and although my official title is comedian, I'm still an ambassador
right.
to the scene, man, because I care about it, and it's the music I love. So
well, it's like the downside of the internet and digital is you get anything instantly and whatnot, but also the upside is it keeps these art forms alive. Like, people are still discovering comics from the 70s and the 80s, and people are still now discovering how good Rodney was. And you know, you hear all these names and the discussions up again. I just feel like good art finds a way to find people again. So
look at Bill Hicks. Bill Hicks.
I was just going to say Bill Hicks.
5 years. You know, Bill was a really good friend of mine. I was with him, you know, when he did the last Letterman appearance, and he was really, you know, he was very sick then. And I'm so happy that, you know, in the last 5 years, people have rediscovered Bill Hicks. And I know for a lot of people, they listen to his stuff and it sounds a little dated because so many comics copped what he did.
Right.
Mm. And the whole attitude and the cigarette and the whole, you know, all of it. And you know, but I love that people are going back and going, oh, that's where it came from. Okay. You know, it's like, you know, the people now that like bands like Avenged Sevenfold and the Black Veil Brides and stuff like that, that's fine. But you better friggin' make sure you love Black Sabbath and Metallica and stuff like that, because that's where it comes from.
Now, you got a band of your own, Gunfire and Sodomy. Do you perform with some of these legends? Is it a different vibe when you do that?
Yeah, well, I did that for about 4 or 5 years. I did get to open for Gwar, so that was really cool.
That's great.
But yeah, that was a thing where it was just like me and three really good friends of mine, and we weren't trying to make money. We did do an EP, which was cool, that we put out. We did get to open for Gwar and do a bunch of shows, but then, you know, the band thing rears its ugly head. You know, this guy, his wife is pregnant. This one can't make a rehearsal because his throat hurts. This one stubbed his toe. You know, it was just like, guys, I love you guys too much to like end this with us hating each other. So let's, you know, we rode this thing as long as we could, you know, we haven't made a penny at it, but we had a great time. You know, I got to go back to concentrating on stand up and doing that metal show. And so, you know, that was a great creative, fun thing. That was very extreme. That something obviously I couldn't do on stage as a comic.
Well, since we've already mentioned Gwar 3 or 4 times, what do you think about Gwar with the new singer, man?
Yeah, I love the new record. It was one of my favorites of 2017. You know, I was friends with Dave Brocky, AKA Odorous Urungus, who had passed away. And, you know, he and I were actually working because I do my comedy albums with Metal Blade Records, and Gwar has been on Metal Blade their whole career. So, you know, I had met Dave down in Richmond, Virginia, and he was like, I want to do a spoken word thing as Odorous, but I need help, you know, writing it. So I said, yeah. And he goes, I tried it a few times, and he sent me the videos, and he and I were emailing back and forth. But, you know, being sort of the creative sort of juggernaut that he was like a whirlwind. You know, he was on to 10 different things. So we had we lost touch for a while, and then unfortunately he passed away. But yeah, he really wanted to launch this, what he called the Spoken Turd Tour. So would have been fun.
Now, well, it's funny. I just popped in my head when we were talking about like comics that are being found. All of a sudden, I've heard Richard Jenny's name a million times recently. Like, people are rediscovering him. Mm. But I was thinking, it's awesome because you're one of these guys who you followed your passion. You're able to keep comedy as your center, but you've done so many things you're interested in, music and I mean, even inside the NFL sports, stuff and sports. And you know, and it's guys like, I think like Joe Rogan podcast, like it is all about preaching that, like finding, you know, having multiple passions and like you're never going to bank on one thing. But now it's like, it seems like that's a great thing to encourage. And you've been successful doing all the different things you like. So I think that's a pretty good testament to you.
I come from a real blue collar family, you know, so my dad, what I couldn't do with my hands that my dad could do, he instilled that work ethic in me. So I find such purpose in work that's where I get enjoyment. You know, I don't need to take vacations. I don't need time off from anything. I get my enjoyment and my fulfillment out of working. So yeah, if there's something, if an opportunity comes up, I want to jump on it. You know, I've written for other comics. I've done TV work. I've done radio stuff. So anywhere I could kind of stretch the creative muscle, and sometimes it's not always my thing, and that's all right. You know, but I'd like to try it at least and just see, like, oh wow, this could be a cool little offshoot for me, you know, to go this way with something. You know, I actually do enjoy writing. You know, it's a definitely more of a solitary thing than obviously performing, but that's a great thing too. You know, I wrote for a lot of the Comedy Central roasts, mm-hmm. and all that, so that was a cool exercise to learn to write in that style. And so yeah, and then, you know, what ends up happening, it all makes you a stronger performer.
Now, are you able to pick and choose your projects now? Like, if you're like, oh, I want to do some more things with sports, are you pretty much whatever comes up, comes up?
Yeah, I mean, like, just kind of go with the flow, man. And just, you know, like, Florentine and I have something that, you know, we're going to be able to announce pretty soon together that, yes. you know, is just a killer yes. combination of, you know, the right place and they're, you know, pretty much just create a freedom and all that. So yeah, I know we always look for situations where, you know, we're going to be kind of be able to do things the way we want to. And because we've, you know, he and I as comedy partners have always done that. You know, we've had 6 volumes of Terrorizing Telemarketer CDs. Yeah. We have 3 Hidden Camera DVDs called Meet the Creeps. That's a whole series. Mm. And we did all that stuff just on our own. We never tried to get signed to anybody or have somebody finance it. Like, we just did that stuff ourselves because we're like, because we get to do this the way we want to. And then if somebody likes it after and wants to give us a deal, then that's great. And that's what ended up happening. And that's pretty much what happened our whole career is like, we do things the way we want to. And then if people want to come on board after, great. And then we still own our own stuff.
Don, I don't want to take up all your time. I one last question. You've worked with so many greats and whatnot, and, you know, all along the line, you've seen friends pass away and comics go. Is there any, like, one person that stands out to you as, like, a, you know, that still today you can't believe is gone and that still hurts just as much, like, every day? Because I think of, like, you and just some of the comics you work with that are not even here anymore, and you've been grinding for so long. I can't imagine how many people you've seen in and out of your life.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, I can be definitely just as sad for a guy like Robin Williams because it's like if a guy who's achieved what he has can't see the joy that he's brought over the years to so many people all over the world, that's a heavy thing. But I mean, I didn't know Robin Williams, but you know, if you talk about somebody who was a superstar mm-hmm. who still couldn't hang on, I mean, that teaches you a lot about depression and stuff like that. So, you know, that's an important thing for people to keep in mind, and especially comics, because we can be prone to depression and we can tend to be loners sometimes. But as far as guys I knew, yeah, I mean, you know, Bill, you know, like I said, was a very good friend yeah. and very supportive of me when I was first starting out. And, you know, Otto and George, who were, yeah. you know, local Jersey legends and, you know, definitely loved by a lot of people. Yep. You know, I really miss Otto a lot. He's, you know, Otto is one of those comics. You know, it's funny when you go out and you work with your friends and stuff. It's like, you know, you might watch for a couple minutes and then you go do right. whatever. You set up your merch or you go back to the green room. Otto and George,
you watched every night. You couldn't wait to get off stage to then sit in the audience and watch Otto and George. So I miss that. You know, there's not a lot of comics like that where you're like, I have to, when I get off stage, I have to watch that.
It
like,
shows you how brilliant his act was when you refer to him as them, because it's all, that's how established both characters were. You know what I mean? Like, you would watch them.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, the only other guy that's, you know, that I toured with, but he's still around, is, you know, I did 10 years with Dice.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was a must. I mean, that was an education every single night on stage and off. So, but yeah, Otto and George and Bill, you know, those are guys I was close with and, you know, miss those guys. But, yeah, there is a whole new generation of up and coming guys who are real sharp and, you know, they're making waves. And I think now is a real good boom for comedy. So yep. Now is a good time to be involved, and just to be in the mix right now is a very good thing. And also there's a lot of, you're not pigeonholed anymore. You don't have to do the Tonight Show to get recognized. You know, you can follow your own path. And that's what's really cool about it. You can kind of just do your own thing and still, you know, you could be out there and make a living, but you don't necessarily have to be a household name, and that's all right.
Yeah. So Don, where can people go check you out, and what, I know you said you got something coming up, but what can we expect from you?
Yeah, just, you know, I list my dates on donjamison.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. So just find me on there. And that's it, man. You know, I'm a worker, man. So I'm always working.
Yep.
You know, for people listening in Jersey, I'm here and there. I'm always working somewhere, you know, nearby. And like I said, I got a couple of things, you know, in the pipeline that I can announce. So we'll have to do this again.
Awesome. Absolutely. So just as a side note, I will say that, you know, everyone I've talked to before I even got to work with you is like, oh, you know, Don's like the nicest guy, most down to earth guy. So, you know, it rains true. So I want to thank you a lot for coming on the podcast today.
Oh, yeah, no problem. And that's the thing, man. Comics always give me advice. I go, three things: do your time, don't steal jokes, and be nice. it sounds like cheesy to say that, but it's like, if you could actually do those three things, you could have a career, really. I mean, they seem so simple, but it seems like 90% of the comedians can't do those three things.
Not one of the three, no.
or two of the three in different combinations, but finding three of the three. And hey, it doesn't cost anything to be nice. So no. I have a nice career. I have nothing to be bitter about. But let's talk again in a year. I might be bitter by then.
Absolutely, man. Don, thanks so much, and good luck with everything you got going on.
Yeah, guys, thanks for everything. Appreciate the support.
That's why I like talking to comics.
Yeah.
It's like having a conversation with you, you know? Like, it's like, it's just a normal, natural, easygoing conversation.
I'm
like,
normal and natural?
No, but there's no, like,
pretentiousness
or like awkwardness. Usually it's kind of like, let's dive into a conversation and see where it goes. Yeah. You know, like, it's not, it doesn't have to be,
we don't have to go in this direction. If it spawns off a little bit, so be it.
Yeah, just a really down to earth dude, man.
Yeah, a little bit of the Donald Trump sniffles there during the interview. I noticed
it's that raging coke habit he has.
Yeah. Exclusive on Verbal Shenanigans.
One and only Don Jamison. Let's take a break. Oh boy, here we go. This is an interesting one.
Yeah, that's on the unique side of our guest spots.
Two things you're really into: puppetry and.
he's like our third puppeteer. Ian Petrella.
Oh yes, Ian. Yes.
And Paul Zaloom.
Yes. He's a different kind of puppeteer.
Yeah, he's more his other equipment.
More your speed.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we're going to be talking to Rich Binning.
Ah, the Rich Binning.
Yes, who is a performer for the show Puppetry the Penis. He's going to be talking to us before he takes off to his do pants. The show in Australia.
Oh, I thought you meant his pants.
Well, he does that eventually.
Yeah, this should be quite interesting. I mean, I remember hearing about this years ago, like, the puppetry thing. It's just amazing that there's something out there, and I guess we're going to find out what it's all about.
Definitely.
So, let's give Rich Binning a call. Yeah, hi. Is this Rich?
It is. Hi.
Rich, it's Scott and Mike from Verbal Shenanigans. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you guys?
Oh, we are.
Doing well.
We are good, man. We are good. Now, I don't even know how to start talking to you, but first off, where are you at now? Now, I know the puppetry of the penis has been around for quite a while at this point. Where are you at with that now? Are you in the States? I know it's internationally known. Where are you with the show at this point?
Yeah, so I'm based out of New York. I've been in my apartment in New York for 10 years, although I've only been there for, you know, less than half of that. And just 2 days ago, I moved out temporarily again because we're going back on tour to Australia. So right now I'm in Massachusetts with my wife's family, and then we fly out on Wednesday for Australia for a 4-month tour.
Yeah, but tell us a little bit about your background before you got into it. For what I understand, you had a lot in performing arts and training. Basically, what did you get into and what led to this new career?
Yeah, well, I grew up in Ohio, small farm town, and my little sisters danced. And so I somehow got roped into taking dance classes, and I ended up loving it, and ended up in high school. I was teaching their classes, and then I went to school for musical theater, and naturally I moved to New York to pursue a career in musical theater. And one of the very first auditions I went to was for this show that I happened to kind of know about called Puppetry of the Penis. and I kind of knew about the show because a college buddy of mine used to do tricks at parties in college. He would stand on coffee tables and announce he was going to do some, you know, genital origami. And
genital origami. Yep.
So when Puppetry of the Penis was having auditions, they encouraged my friend and I to audition, and we auditioned as a little team. And I didn't even know what they were casting for at the time, and ended up I got hired for a private party, and it went terribly. It was on a bus, like a party bus. Awful. I had to meet this group of girls that were not expecting me, didn't know what Puppetry of the Penis was, and they hid me on a bus, and I had to pop out of this bus. I'm trying to do tricks, and a lot of the tricks require two hands, and I'm just stumbling around.
You're basically just a creepy guy with his junk out on the bus at that point.
That's exactly what it was. And these private parties are really only like 15 minutes long, the routine that you do. And then, but this, I met them in Coney Island, and they were taking a bus into Manhattan, and that's like an hour ride, you know. And so then I finished, and then I just had to get dressed and hang out on the bus.
Oh my God. So, I guess when you go into like the audition, what is like the plan? Do they go out and say, okay, our show has these sets of puppetry, or is it like, well, show us what you can do? How's that?
Yeah.
Give us something new.
Yeah. So, after shows, they sell a book. We still sell the book. And it's step-by-step instructions on how to do a bunch of the tricks. So they had photocopied and, you know, emailed us five of the tricks, the step-by-step instructions. So we learned how to do those. And then I think, you know, actually at the audition, I think they did they called it a master class where they just had all the guys in the room drop their pants. And then we all learned how to do some of the tricks and just like go over them. And, you know, in the theater world, and in, I feel like, any kind of auditioning world, when except for American Idol, you know, that type of thing, when you audition, you just go into a room and there's like three people behind a table. But this, they booked a theater and they invited the press to come. So we had to sign waivers, and there's cameras everywhere. I'm like, what am I doing? Am I really going to get naked in front of all these cameras? And there's still photos floating around the internet from that audition.
Now, when you're getting into this, what are your thoughts? Like, most people would be like a little nervous or taken aback just by like doing a nude scene or taking, you know, nude scenes in theater or nude scenes in movie. This is way beyond a nude scene. This is working with what God gave you and making that the focal point of the show. What are your thoughts going into this? Do you have any idea? Are you going into it naive, or are you just like, all right, well, I'm just looking for a job and doing whatever it takes?
Well, I the show existed
right
before I was a part of it, so I knew that it was this. I knew the show was had been around the world, and you know, it had this West End run, and it was on HBO, and all this stuff. And what really struck me about the show was that it's non-sexual, and so I thought, well, this may be like I did a show previous to that where I did have this really kind of graphic sex scene kind of on stage, and I was so embarrassed to have my mom at the show. And this, I was like, well, this is kind of like the other extreme. I'm more naked, and for, you know, an hour, I'm completely naked, but this, we strip it of anything sexual. So that's what I thought was really unique about the show. And I was terrified to do the show, you know, for the first time. Mm.
So, like, how long is a show itself? Like, how many do you have different bits? Is it just, okay, here's this thing, here's that thing? What's kind of the structure and the length of the show?
Yeah, so when we...
The length of the show, he said. The length of the show.
Yeah. Well, what's great about the length, though, I know we're making the joke, but there's a giant screen behind us, so the camera operator can just make it as big as they want. So you want to stay good friends with the camera operator. we are on stage, the two of us. It's a two-man show, and we're on stage for anywhere between an hour and 15 minutes. It's a pretty structured show. It's scripted, but there's a fair amount of just talking to the audience and interacting with the audience, so it can mess with the runtime a little bit, but somewhere between an hour and 15. And then when we're on the road with the show, we also hire a comedian to open for us to really just set the tone that what you're about to see is this is a comedy show.
My schedule's pretty open. I can cancel some gigs. So when you do this and you start to finally realize that, holy crap, I can make money and have a job doing this. What are your like family's reactions to this? Like, hey mom, like you were just saying, performing for, are your family like very supportive, or are they like, oh my god, what are you doing? And then how do you have them out there, and how do you get past that barrier?
Yeah, well, I grew up in a pretty conservative home. At least, you know, my mother was pretty conservative, and so I was really, really nervous to tell her. So I grew up in a home where I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons on TV. Even when I was in college, when I would come home and I would turn the Simpsons on, it was nope, change the channel. So wow. Like that's the home I grew up in. So it was a tough sell, but I had to, you know. So after I don't think I told her about the private party thing that I did. And then after I did the private party, I just decided, nope, that's not real. That's not theater. That's just, I did not like that. But then right after that, they booked us off Broadway for an 8-week contract. And then, so then I could tell my mom, I'm in New York and I booked an off Broadway show. It's won all these awards. It's a really popular show. Called Puppetry of the Penis. I've got to be on stage naked the whole time. And then I'd explain the concept.
Oh my god,
that was. But she's really supportive. Every time she comes, she's been to the show like 3 or 4 times. She buys a stack of books and she hands them out to all of her friends. And so
that's my son's dog. Yep. There it is.
She bought me a Christmas ornament that said Puppetry of the Penis on it.
I wish you had the first I wish you recorded the first time you told your mom. That would be just a video, man. For the ages.
Yeah. Oh. I don't know if I'd want to hear it.
We would, though. The audience.
So when you do a show, tell us, like, how long do you prepare before it? Is there any kind of, like, special... I don't know how to say it, like stretching or exercises and get warm up.
That's a fair question. And, you know, we actually make that a part of the show. So the first before we really get into the tricks of the show, we do a big reveal on stage, and then we're warming up and stretching on stage and all that stuff to stay limber. Heat, though, is, I think, the biggest factor.
So if you're playing a cold auditorium, that's not – the show's not going to go great.
Yeah, it's a shorter show.
So tell us – like we've heard of it, obviously, and we see the different how long it's run, and you say you're going off to Australia. Tell us where this show has taken you and why you think it's so successful. Like, it still holds it. Cause you know, like you hear it and you're like, oh, maybe that's like a novelty thing. Maybe it'll be popular for a month and we'll never hear it. It's been quite a while now. And you're traveling all over the world doing this. Why do you think it translates?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, the audiences, the reaction varies from country to country. And, you know, there's some places that I don't know if we'll ever get to. Like, you know, I've been
with the show to, I think,
I don't know, somewhere between, I tried to count, maybe like 15 countries.
Wow.
With the show. So anywhere that they speak English, they can send me. But the show's also been done in other languages as well. But we've never been in the South, you know? so I would love to just, like, get booked in Memphis or somewhere. I don't know if that's going to happen. But I think that, you know, and it's easy to book the show in places like Norway and Sweden and Denmark and Finland, all these, like, progressive kind of places where they're
cold there, though.
With nudity.
Cold there.
Oh, it is very cold there. That's why I'm very happy to be going back to Australia.
Now, for what I understand, they also have a 3D show. Tell us a little bit about that.
Like, well, the we did the 3D show. I think it was 2011. We launched a 3D show, and so what's usually a pretty low budget show, because it doesn't take much to make our show work, which is also I think part of the success of it. It's two people. All we need to make the show work is two microphones, a screen, a projector, and a camera in the front row. You know, that's it. And we opened in Las Vegas 2 years ago, and it's still running in Las Vegas in a small 100-seat theater. And then when we go on the road, we can book 2,000-seat venues and sell those out. So the screen allows us to book big theaters, which is helpful. But the 3D show, we had to rent a ton of equipment and work with a 3D studio that did a lot of the stuff for Avatar at the time. And we, in 2011, we were renting one of the few live projection 3D cameras.
Wow.
And so the audience would wear 3D glasses, and then what they were seeing on the screen was coming off of the screen.
Oh.
And kind of like in their face.
Wow. You got to warm up to that.
Yeah.
Now, do you have any any time frame that you're going to do this until? Do you see yourself doing this for years to come, or is this eventually going to phase out? Or are you just kind of enjoying the moment, seeing where it takes you?
Well, every time I do the show, I'm like, okay, this was fun. I think I don't pursue it anymore. I'm like, oh, that was good. That chapter is done, and then I get on with my life, and then there's something else that comes up. It just keeps taking me away again. And I've always, always, always loved doing the show.
Right.
So I'm always happy to go back on the road with the show. But every time I feel like, oh, that might be the last time. And then something somewhere in the world gets booked and off I go.
You were talking about private shows before. For what I was reading up, you apparently did a private show for Christina Aguilera. Can you give us some kind of details on that? Or is it any different than, say, a regular crowd doing it for a celebrity?
Yeah, so what was fun about the Christina Aguilera show, we were running at a theater in West Hollywood at the time. And she wanted to come see the show, but it was our day off. And so they just asked if we could come in on our day off to do a show for her and 40 of her friends. So we just did the show as if it was a normal show. It just happened to be for Christina Aguilera and all of her friends and no one else. So that had a whole different vibe than your regular private party vibe, but that was it was a lot of fun.
It was better than the bus, is what you're telling
us.
Yeah.
It went a little better than the bus trip.
Yep. Oh, my gosh, yes.
Now, let me ask you. You're up there. You bare your body. You bare your private parts. You know, something that, you know, that takes a lot of balls, no pun intended, but it takes, you know, a lot. I'm sure you get used to it as time goes by. But are you insecure in any other ways about, like, in real life about, like, either your body or things that we would never think of, like, hey, he's insecure about this, but yet he goes up every night on stage and, you know, and takes his pants off in front of people and performs with it?
Yeah, I am, actually. Well, so when I first started doing the show, I was I didn't work out at the time, and the creators of the show was never about how you looked on stage, so that was never a part of it. And then I ended up just getting into fitness and all this stuff, and so now I look a lot different from when I first started doing the show. But I had been doing the show for 3 years maybe when I first started taking yoga classes, and I was so insecure. This is really fun. In the show, we wear shoes and socks, and that's it. That's the only thing we wear. And when I started taking yoga, I hated my feet. And I didn't want other people to see my feet. And so I used to wear socks to yoga class.
Meanwhile, everyone else is complaining that you took your pants off in yoga. Like, sir, not here. Yeah.
It was hot yoga. Come on, Scott.
Yeah.
Gotta let him go.
That's funny. It's just funny how that works. You know, like, even though you do something, you still have, you know, all these insecurities and things you think that, you know, when you're not doing it, like, that's your job. That's what you're doing. I'm sure you probably don't think twice before it. But yet, if it comes into real world, different setting, different people, all of a sudden it reacts something else in your brain. You're like, oh, crap, you know, I hate my big toes or something, you know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Now, did you ever have a show where maybe somebody came in and didn't figure out, like, the jive of the show and kind of maybe won them over, where they were maybe kind of prudish at first, but at the end they were kind of like, oh, okay, now I get it. This is fun.
It happens all the time, and I'll tell you who it happens with the most often. It happens most often with men that are drugged there to the theaters by their significant other.
I ain't seen no penis. I ain't doing that.
Be there. Yeah, but we really try and make the show for everyone.
Right.
Man, woman, gay, straight, doesn't matter. We want you to just find the humor in the naked male body, and we're going to twist our penis to make it look like a hamburger. And you're going to laugh. And, you know, and a lot of those men that are like that, when they come in, we invite them on stage to make the hamburger with us.
Oh,
and
my
so,
God.
Or show us their own tricks. Yeah.
Has anybody come with their own trick that, like, blew you guys away? Like, I'll show you this. Like, this is the wombat. You know, like.
I forget. We've seen some interesting stuff. A lot of times, you know, when we were in Scandinavia, guys wouldn't come on stage with us to show us their tricks, but in the lobby after the show, they would just pull their pants down. Yeah. or just tell us, or to try and describe to us some trick of, like, I forget what they called it, like maybe a bird fountain where they would, I don't know. I think it involved, you know, using the scrotum as some sort of a dish for
bird feeder.
I don't know.
When you see my bird feeder, set your show back 20 years.
Now, when you go out for other roles, do you put this on your resume when you present yourself to people, or do you kind of keep it on the side? It's like, all right, that's a different project versus this acting role I'm trying to get.
Yeah, I used to be selective about what I would tell people I did and did not do. But really, because I've never used a stage name, I've always used my real name. It's so Googleable now that I've just made the decision I can't hide from it. So I'm just going to put it on every resume, and I'm going to put it front and center of every resume. And And what it ends up being is it's a conversation in the room where they're like, wait, you do what? So
like, yeah, like, Rich, we get it. You put the hamburger away. This is a World War II.
This is Hamlet.
Well, I mean, before we like, could you ever like, you know, take a step back, you know, when maybe when you're not touring and not doing the shows and like, think about how crazy it is what you do and what you've been able to make a living at. Like, do you ever, does it still hit you, or is it still like, hey, you know, like, this is what I, like, dude, or do you, like, is it still amazing sometimes? Like, I perform in front of people and make shapes and characters and things with my penis and, you know, connect to people and make people laugh and feel welcome. Is it ever still like, oh, my God, or has that gone away over the years?
No, it's, I feel like that every day. All the time, especially when I'm not, when I come back from tour and then I just kind of like feel like I'm like blending back into society and I'm just like, you know, or I walk out of a bathroom and I see that my fly's undone and I'm embarrassed for a second. I'm like, wait, why am I embarrassed about this?
I guess one other question. I mean, we had a lot of fun talking with you and about stuff, but do you get sick of talking about this on the side? Like, dude, if you're ever out with friends or you just like, guys, I just want to talk about the Super Bowl. Don't bring up my job.
I never mind talking about it, but I'm always definitely aware that it's something that not everyone's comfortable talking about. Right. So where, you know, I love my job and I could talk about it for forever, but it took me until last year to tell my landlord what I did. and he lives across the hall from me. And at one point I left and I was in Las Vegas for 2 years and just sending him rent checks every, you know.
Send him that penis money.
Yeah.
last question. I just thought, what about like dating? Like, you ever go on a date and like not tell him at all? And like, hey, you know, you're a good looking guy. Or date him. Like, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a teacher. Well, what do you do for a living? You're like, oh boy. Like,
I've been married the entire time I've done the show. Yeah. Yeah.
So you lucked out. That's got to be real interesting for people who are single doing that.
Yeah, and I think I've done the show. So I've been a part of the show for 9 years. I think I've done the show with maybe four or five different guys, and all of them have been single. And I think it's been good for their sex lives, at least on tour.
I just always think like for them, in general, like going forward, like, hey, Dad, this is Rich. Mm. You know, oh, what do you do? A stockbroker? No, not exactly.
Yeah.
I feel like it might be good for a one-night stand.
Yeah.
But going forward.
Yeah, it's the same approach that I feel like I have when I'm not sure how people are going to react to what I do, or I just try and be as vague as possible. So, on my drive out of New York, I actually blew a tire, so I was at the tire store waiting for them to fix my, you know, put the new tires on. And the guy just, you know, is talking to me, and I'm just mentioning I'm going to be in Australia for the next 4 months. And, oh, what are you going to be doing in Australia? Work.
Puppeteering.
What kind of work? It's a show, a theater show. What kind of show? It's a comedy show. What kind? Oh, God. Okay. I play with my dick. I play.
Rich, thanks so much for coming on, man. It's really fun. It's cool to hear, like, how, you know, it's such a weird concept to begin with, but how professional you are about it. And I'm sure you've talked about it for so long that there's no question you haven't been asked. But I want to thank you for coming on and giving us some time.
Yeah, I really appreciate it.
And do you have any social media or anything to promote if anybody wants to keep up with you?
You can just find me at my name at kind of everything. So Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff, just at Rich Binning, B-I-N-N-I-N-G.
Thanks so much, man, and good luck with the show. Have fun in Australia.
Yeah, man.
Cool, thanks.
Mike.
Yeah?
The whole time I'm thinking, you know, like, you're looking for a job.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's how I lost the job. I was looking up guests one day.
I'm working on my craft.
You don't understand. I do the side thing. It's a podcast.
It's a real thing. I'm telling you. Like, in the lunchroom, Mike?
I know it's a weird thing to show to CEO, but, you know, he was interested what I was due up to.
You know, like, could you ever, realistically, if they were like, Mike, you know, we're going to pay you a lot of money. You're going to do this. Could you ever think you could drop your guard enough to do it?
That's a tough one. Like, enough to make a decent living.
Let's say they came up to you right now, like, we're going to do a 2-month run, and you're going to make 20 grand.
For how long do you get?
2 months. 10 grand a month.
10 grand a month.
Right now, cash money. They're like, Mike, we're going to train you. You're going to do the hamburger. You're going to do all these tricks.
I would definitely be under consideration. I mean, I would be disappointed
if you didn't, because it would be a great story for the podcast. And great material. Like, we can't come up with material every week, as you guys can see. Mm-hmm. But that's why we're loaded with guests, people. We don't
we have nothing to talk to each other about.
We have zero left to talk about. I think I could do it.
For
the right money. And, like, if I wasn't doing, like, other things. But it would be very hard, obviously, no pun intended.
Yeah, I could see you, like, after getting comfortable with it, like, really just having, like, total fun with it.
Yeah, I think...
Like, they'd probably be yelling at you, stick to the script, Scott! No, check this out!
Look at this, it's a rocket ship! No. I think it's like anything. Like, it just probably takes some getting used to, and, like, I bet you these guys don't even think about it beforehand, like, anymore.
No.
You know what I mean?
No.
But... You know, maybe we can get you an audition. Even just go on the audition and tell us the story.
This is sagging balls.
This is the toilet toucher.
Ta-da.
But anyway, Rich Binning, awesome guest. Let's take a break. All right. Another week, another interesting batch of guests, man.
Yeah, it's quite random.
That's what we are, I think. We are just the random podcast.
You know us? Let me show you something.
But you know what? I wouldn't want to talk about one thing all the time. Yeah. I wouldn't want to do, like, we talk to comedians every week, or we talk to athletes every week.
I want to talk to organic vegetarians.
It's funny how we, like, we get things in batches, though. Like, the one time where we had the two, like, underwater crime scene guy, basically, like, treasure hunter. You said coming up, you have two people that, like,
who sailed around the world.
Two gladiators. Like, it's weird.
Well, that's the thing. You send them all out, you don't hear anything, and then, like, one responds. You're like, oh, cool, I hit my topic. And then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, crap, everybody responded.
Yeah, but I guess it's a good problem, right?
Yeah, I guess you don't go back to your friends. No, I don't care you sailed around the world. I already got one.
I'm done with you. I'm done with you.
What happened? Oh, a pirate got you. Good for you. You survived.
Yeah, whatever. Stop being dramatic.
Look at you. Why don't you stay in one place for once?
But,
you know, meet people.
What we got over there? What do you want to talk about?
What? I saw kind of come up in my news feed here. There's apparently Doritos... They're trying to come out with... Yes.
Several flavors.
Well, let me explain
further. They're these new chip. It's all the rage. Mm-hmm. The kids love them.
Side note, the Blaze Doritos are awesome, but I digress. But there's apparently a plan by Doritos. They're basically saying in their market there's more men that eat Doritos than women. And they think that women are self-conscious of eating it, especially considering... Doritos makes noise.
Yeah, so they leave a little oranginess. And, yeah. You know, they're not
so
the
there's
neatest.
Apparently a plan to come up with, like, a Lady Doritos where they won't make as much of a crunch and, like, women won't feel self-conscious about eating them.
This is 2018.
Yes, it is.
This is what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
Here.
Now, I wonder if men eat Lady Doritos or they're going to be looked down upon or something like that.
Nice Lady Doritos, bro.
Dude, they were out of Cool Ranch. What could I do?
What? What's the matter, bro? They were all out of man Doritos?
Some, like, 15-year-old kid and all this. What are you doing in there? Nothing. there better not be Lady Doritos in there.
Some like real conservative dad like exploring his son's bedroom and like picking up, going in the garbage can.
What is this?
Oh my God, no.
Why can't you be on heroin?
Lady Doritos.
No.
Will they be
my
pink?
My life is shattered.
Will they be pink?
They don't have any details. They're basically saying they're going to come up with a plan because they want to like tackle the female market and get more, you know, income into the company. But there's no official, this is what we're going to do. But apparently one of the things is that Lady Doritos won't crunch as loud.
I hate the planet that we live in sometimes. Like, I just want to move off of this and go start somewhere else.
Who was the guy that, like, yelled at his girl? What was that sound? You son of a...
No, this was definitely brought up by, like, some ladies in the company. Like, you know...
And Cheryl were talking.
These Doritos, they're just too loud. Mm. Can you, like, we need some Lady Doritos. You don't represent the women marketplace enough here.
But we have, sweet chili, would that satisfy the women?
What flavor would a Lady Dorito be?
I don't know, like organic carrot, I guess? I don't know. Just,
ice cream?
It would defy the purpose of a Dorito,
sweet?
I'm guessing.
But
yeah,
I don't know.
Peppermint candy,
that's
Doritos.
That's a little weird. Mm. But before we get out of here, I figure we haven't done this in a while, so let's go to it.
You're going to a sound effect, Scott. What are you doing?
Brand new.
Oh, no. Well, we stopped talking about it.
Brand new. We're talking about invading shit. We're talking about bad and shit. It's freaking, freaking brand new. Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl. You know I like them bears. Another song that just gets me all jazzed up.
It's been about 3 months since we've done this.
Yeah, it's been a while. No, I did a holiday bear one, right? I did like a Christmas bear news.
What? Did we?
Halloween bears, maybe I did? I don't know. Anyway, bear news is a segment that we do in the show here. It's not really a segment, but we kind of read bear news and different stories about bears. It just kind of took a life of its own. There is talk, Spurlow, what I hear from the Verbal Shenanigans office.
And it's a huge office.
Our people have been communicating with me that bear news might become a visual thing, like a video type thing. So. Well. We're,
will we get Lady Bear news?
We're in the work. No, we don't care about Lady Bears. All right, so here's a couple stories. Nordic College Skiing Championship delayed over a bear den. Maine's Collegiate Nordic Ski Championship had to take a detour around a bear den. Officials say the den with a hibernating mother bear and two cubs was discovered Saturday near the race course in Maine. Colby head coach Tracy Coates said the race had to be laid 30 minutes so the women's race could be changed. The men's race had already been completed, meaning that they ran right over these bears that were hibernating. So apparently they had to change the women's route, and they didn't disturb the bears.
See, if I was a coach and figure we could probably get a world record out of this, I would just want to send the ladies down.
Right.
You want it bad enough? Get away from that bear.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to run faster.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to be a champion, this is cross country.
I guess it's kind of hard to run with skis on.
But, you know, this is the outdoors. It should be part of the race. In fact, yeah. I encourage putting more bears into
the
race. I
think that should be the new biathlon for the Winter Olympics. But
there's a lot of lame Olympic events. You tell me bear Nordic skiing, like where you're trying to win a race but also avoid dying? That is a sport.
How about you jump off a slope and you land on the back of a bear and you have to ride it the rest of the way?
I like it.
I know. I just came up with
What if you're surrounded by actual bears and then lots of hairy gay men also? So it's just
well, see, the real bear would run faster, so if you get off the slope and you land on the fat gay guy, you're like, ah, damn it, this is going to cost me 10 seconds.
All right. Bear that attacked three men may have been captive at one time.
Okay.
So new information is suggesting the black bear that attacked three men and a dog last month near Isabella may have been captive at one time. The Star Tribune reports the bear was deranged by severe brain swelling and had two external abnormalities. According to the Star Tribune, Minnesota Department, this happened in Minnesota, of Natural Resources, bear research biologist Dave Garshellis says the bear had a swath of missing hair around the neck and damaged rear claws. He's one of the first people to examine the bear after it was shot in the face by a DNR conservation office.
Wow.
He said there was a scar tissue on the neck, hair follicles missing, and a complete ring ranging from 1 to 2 inches wide, suggesting that it had a collar at one point.
I just like, he shot him in the face. Minnesotans don't mess around with their bears, man.
It said sometimes collars would cause temporary hair loss, but that missing hair in a bear was, it was permanent and fully circular. And so they seemed to be puzzled, and the nails looked as if they were clipped.
I gotta be honest, if I had a bear on a collar, I might let him go one day. I got a feeling I wouldn't hold on to it for the whole bear life. I don't know how long that is. I'm guessing it's longer than the dog. So.
Just picturing this emotional goodbye scene between you and, I don't know, whatever your bear would
Chubbs,
be called.
We'll call him.
You and Chubbs. Just like, all right, buddy, get out there.
You live your life.
You're making this harder.
Go on. That's your home. Goodbye, Mr. Chubbs.
Yeah, this adds to the characters in your head. All right. And this one is pretty relevant. There is Ozzy the Grizzly Bear.
Okay.
He's been picking Super Bowl winners for for a couple years now.
All right.
Ozzy was able to picked the Eagles.
Look at him.
Ozzy the Grizzly Bear at Zoo Montana officially chose the Philadelphia Eagles to win the Super Bowl over the New England Patriots during the sixth annual selection event at the zoo. This past Tuesday, the bear made his pick by licking the whipped cream off the one of the two peanut butter and marshmallow fluff frosted cakes decorated with nuts, dog treats, and bearing the team logos. Ozzy's record, Burlo, you ask?
Yes.
4-1.
Look at him. When he lose.
His only loss coming when Seattle beat the Broncos. He was trying to go with his fellow animal.
He was going for the Manning thing. Oh, man.
But what's your thought on these? They have all these animals that pick things. I guess it's kind of fun.
I guess it's cute, but I guess like somebody says, oh, he's undefeated and all that. Goldfish has ate the food for the AFC for the last 6 years. It's like, it's like the 10th item in my news feed. That's the last thing.
It'd be
I'm
so funny
about.
If the bear that we were just talking about before with like the missing neck hair and the claws. He was the
that
one
was
that
his previous life.
He guessed everything wrong and he just.
You picked the Browns like Ken!
Come on, man!
Get out of here! Stupid bear!
Bring it, Ozzy!
It'd be really great if like one of those like million-dollar bets was based off of Ozzy picking the Eagles. Floyd Mayweather is like, I can't bet against Ozzy.
Listen, I put a couple bets in yesterday, and Ozzy's got a better record than I have. Yeah. But I did win my pool. So
you did.
That is pretty
awesome.
And I wasn't even paying attention to that box, and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, my God, I won.
It kind of fell into you.
Right. But, yeah, so Ozzy 4-1. It'd be funny if they let him – they put 32 – things and he chose. If he chose the winner out of 32 boxes,
yeah,
I'd
be
impressed.
Kind of cool. I think they should have like spreads for him so he understands. You know, New England
like dessert,
with the points.
Dessert spread.
Yeah, something where it's
nice
like
food spread.
Something where I say, okay, you really know your stuff, Ozzy.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. 32 preseason where he's going to pick the Super Bowl winner. If he could do that, I'm all in on this bear.
That idiot chose the Vegas Golden Knights.
Not a bad bet right now.
I know. That's a funny...
But anyway, that is another installment of Bear News. All right, Burlo, another fantastic week of the podcast. Anything to promote before we get out of here?
I will promote Aisha Ash, a former guest of ours. She's starting to do more YouTube videos to promote the Swan Dreams Project to help out lower communities get into ballet, both African Americans and lower income families, get them into ballet and enjoy the sport and the activity. So, She's doing YouTube videos. You can look up her channel, The Swan Dreams Project, or go on to theswandreamproject.com.
Absolutely. And I'm going to promote, I'm going to be doing the polar bear plunge again.
Oh, look at that.
We did that a couple years ago.
Bear news!
Oh, yeah. See, I see what you did there.
You say that? You said bear.
You're so witty.
We did bear.
You're so witty.
I know. I'm going to tour Don Jameson later. Yeah.
You and Don just chumming it up. Maybe Jim Florentine might stop by.
Well, he gets a little quirky. You know, we usually send him out of the room.
You and Don, buddies for life.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'll put the, I'll tweet it out or something, but I'll put the, if you want to donate to Special Olympics, it's just a good fundraiser. We do it because my cousin participates in the Special Olympics every year. And does different events with them, so it's just a good cause, and that'll be on the 24th. We'll put it on our page or something in case there's any charitable people out there. But Berlo, I think it's time to get out of here. I want to thank Don for coming on, and it's just been another great week in the podcast. Life is funny, laugh at it, keep the wind at your back. Very, very timely reference.
Yeah. Much like war.
Better stand.